How's the head? A question bartenders regularly ask their customers, knowing they've had a heavy one the night before. The bartender will set about making the customer center of concern and may create a potion which could offer some form of relief from their alcohol-induced despair. The same question is rarely asked of bartenders in relation to their mental health and well-being, despite working in an environment that is extremely challenging. We live at a time, fortunately, where people are becoming increasingly more honest about their mental health. In this programme, you're going to hear bar staff speak openly and honestly about their experience of working in an environment that is more likely than most to experience stress, depression, breakdown and burnout. For the duration of this programme, we are placing hospitality staff at the centre of concern.
Because it's hospitality, it's got this master and servant mentality. You're there to serve. And, you know, as a friend of mine who's a chef says, I'm here to serve you, I'm not your servant. You know, and I think that's a very powerful distinction.
You know, the very definition of hospitality is bringing people into your venue or to your outlet or to your home and making them feel safe, warm and comfortable. And yet we don't provide the same level of hospitality to ourselves within the industry. And in the name of having a good time or partying hard or living this hedonistic lifestyle, what we really should be doing is sitting down and kind of treating each other with compassion and kindness and care. So I would like to see much more of that, because there is definitely a problem there.
I used to work in a bar and it was actually really nice, you know, and they had on the walls, through these doors walked the best bartenders in Ireland, and it was like a stage door. Like, you looked at that and you're like, okay, I got this, I can do it. And you walked through those doors. Now, obviously there's pros and cons to everything. For me, it was escapism. And I threw myself into my work because I was like, this is just fantastic. I can just create this persona and I'm just going to give everything to there, and it's going to make me so happy and all this kind of stuff. That's obviously never a good thing to do on a long-term basis.
A busy bar or restaurant is not an unfamiliar sound within the Irish hospitality sector. In fact, it is an extremely profitable one. The drinks industry alone keeps 90,000 people in work and generates exchequer revenue worth 2.5 billion. There is no denying that the hospitality sector is a huge contributor to the Irish economy. But for such a huge feature of our economy, I considered it to be quite shocking to discover that there is little to no research on the challenges faced by staff working in this industry. Despite COVID-19 having a huge effect and negatively impacting the employment rates and profits for 2020 and beyond, there's evidence to suggest that a hidden epidemic exists in the hospitality sector, even before the pandemic. I looked to our neighbours in the UK who recognise there is a problem, and as a result have carried out extensive research. This research deemed hospitality staff to be one of the most stressed employee populations in the UK. 70% of hospitality workers report feeling overworked, and 45% take time off due to stress. The hospitality sector in the UK has one of the highest occurrences of employee burnout, with 1 in 7 employees experiencing stress-related illness, and many leaving the profession entirely. This begs the question, what is it about working in the industry that makes it so challenging? I conducted an interview with charity founder Tim Etherington Judge via Zoom to try and gain some valuable insight into the potential issues that these workers are facing.
Hi, my name's Tim. I'm the founder of Healthy Hospo. So Healthy Hospo is a not-for-profit organisation aimed at building a healthier, happier hospitality industry. A simple remit, but with a very wide range. We work with anyone that works in hospitality at any level, anywhere in the world. So we've got an education platform with 6 core pillars of health. So sleep, nutrition, exercise, social connection, mental health, and then the business of health. And we focus on those. So we work with individuals, outlets, and brands all around the world to educate people on how to live healthier and happier working with businesses to provide healthier and happier operations for their staff, and then work with brands to create events and advocacy around health and wellness. Since we launched in 2018, the response has been amazing, particularly during this current period with the COVID pandemic and the lockdown. We're busier than ever. So it's been amazing. I think when we started, we were really one of very few voices talking about health and wellness in the industry. But over the last 2 years, that number of voices, that chorus calling for improved health and wellness has definitely expanded. There are a lot more organizations out there, a lot more brands, and talking about health and wellness as well. The conversation is definitely changing for the better. You know, it's still a phenomenally long way to go, and we've really only started this journey.
As Tim mentioned, the response to Healthy Hospo has been vast. I asked him, what types of issues were people presenting with?
So the big one is sleep. I always say that sleep is the foundation on which good health is built. Because if you're not sleeping well, it doesn't matter how good your nutrition is, it doesn't matter how much you exercise, how strong your social connections are, things will eventually start to fall apart, both mentally and physically. So we really start with sleep, and the hospitality industry is one of the most sleep-deprived industries in the world because of the unusual opening times, because of the extremely long hours that people work, because of the substance abuse, because of wider societal pressures as well, where kind of sleep has become the enemy of productivity, and also the increase in technology in the bedroom, you know, people taking their phones into their bedroom, really disrupting sleep. So a lot of people really struggle with their sleep, and that manifests itself in a number of ways. It manifests itself in burnout, you know, increased struggles with depression. Obviously, it's also an extremely stressful working environment. You know, for some reason, people, when they go out to bars and restaurants, seem to become the worst versions of themselves. And it's the workers of hospitality outlets that have to pick that up and deal with it. But without any of the psychological support that's really required to deal with such stressful situations. Pretty much everyone I know that works in hospitality has some form of back problem from a physical health point of view, because it's that constant leaning forward, whether you're a bartender leaning over your bar station, a chef leaning over, you know, your workstation in the kitchen, or a waiter, you know, leaning over the tables to serve the food. So many people I know have quite severe back problems. So it's just a whole kind of gamut of issues. Plus, you've also got this kind of toxic masculinity, this macho attitude of the industry. It's this excessive peer pressure to drink more, to party harder, to work the hardest, as if it's some sort of badge of honor that has to be earned, that, you know, you have to go through the shit and you have to have some sort of major issue to prove yourself, you know, to prove that you're tough enough. And I find that deeply troubling as well.
When people present with these types of issues, it is not unfamiliar to Tim, and he has something of great value to offer. He has worked in this industry for many, many years, and his lived experience has allowed him to offer a great deal of empathy. He started out in the industry at the age of 14, working his way up from a burger joint in Cornwall, his hometown, to becoming a global ambassador, which for many people is seen as a premium role within the industry.
You get to travel the world, you have a big fat corporate credit card, you get to drink in the world's best bars, you know, run trainings and build advocacy around the world. It took me to 63 countries. I got to have some amazing experiences that I never would have had. But these roles also are, I wouldn't say a poison chalice, but they are extremely demanding and difficult roles.
Tim grappled with constant jet lag, sleep deprivation, loneliness, bad diet due to the always on the go nature of his job, and extreme levels of alcohol consumption. This lifestyle combined with a long-running diagnosis of depression all became too much.
So November 2016 at the Athens Bar Show, I was there to give a talk on bourbon. I went there, gave my talk on bourbon, went back to my hotel room and tried to commit suicide with a bottle of whiskey and some prescription painkillers. And that was really the kind of the moment that changed everything within the industry for me. I'd reached a point of hopelessness. You know, I didn't see any hope for the future. I didn't see a way out of this situation that I'd built for myself. And the only option that was in my mind was to end everything. It was the only way I could get out of this situation.
Luckily, Tim survived. Coming out the other side of it, he decided to go public with his experience in the hope that he would receive support around it. He was taken aback by the different types of responses he got.
But what really changed my life was all of the private messages I got from people telling me their struggles with mental health, with the industry, or telling me their stories of friends that have struggled and their experiences. You know, hundreds and hundreds of messages. And it was those messages that made me realize that there is a much wider problem in the industry, that I wasn't the only one, and that no one was really talking about it in a serious way. So what kind of person would I be if I turned my back on everyone? If I kind of acknowledged that there was a problem and then did nothing to try and help resolve that problem? So that was the genesis or the seed for Healthy Hospo.
I thought it might be beneficial to delve even deeper into a world that is finally starting to talk about these issues. And there are people out there just like Tim, working hard to make that happen.
My name is Jack McGarry. I'm one of the founders of the Dead Rabbit, which is an Irish pub and cocktail bar in New York City. I'm obviously from Belfast, from Ardoyne in North Belfast, and I came to New York in 2010, and we opened a bar in 2013, I believe, February 12th, 2013. And obviously the bar has went on to do very well with awards and recognition. But in terms of prior to that, I'm obviously from Belfast. I've worked in a lot of bars throughout the hospitality sector in Belfast city centre and also London, which included the Merchant Hotel, Apartments, Northern Wig. I mean, most of the bars that you would know of during that time I've worked in. And then in London, I worked in at that period of time, it was one of the best bars in the world called Milk and Honey. So I have a deep body of work within the hospitality sector.
From a very young age, Jack had a big decision to make. He was coming towards the end of his A-levels and he had to decide, was he going to go down the academic route or explore this unwavering passion and desire within him to become the best at bartending? He decided to have a look into the bar industry and took a year out. And it was during this time that Jack gained employment with his now business partner, Sean Muldoon, at the Merchant Hotel in Belfast.
Sean took two pieces of ice, and it was table one in the Merchant Hotel, which is the table to the left-hand side. And one was perfectly cut and you could see straight through it. And the other piece was cloudy and not perfectly cut. And he said, there's two different types of people in this world. There's the people who go for perfection, or there's people that don't care. And he said, like, I only care about this, the perfection, going for perfection. And that's really where it all, like, everything led up to that moment, but that's really where it all started. It really properly started for me. And then I went to work at the Merchant and all my money went in the cocktail books. It was easily 20,000-30,000 pounds. And all I did was read, study, mess around with cocktails. Like, that's all I focused on. And then obviously the Merchant started winning awards, and then that led into the opportunity of coming to America. So that's how I got into the industry. I got into it because it was something that I felt that I could be the best at.
Jack was a talent behind the bar, and this was recognized by many. Opportunities began to arise, but as Jack reflects back now, his mental health was beginning to suffer.
Before America, it was like I was always on the edge, and there was times, like, even when I was in London for that year, like, I was heavily taking like things like cocaine and stuff like that. And I had a breakdown before I went to America because I moved to London as a transient, like, stopgap to go to America. But the bar still, I was only meant to be there for like 6 months or whatever. And then I ended up coming back to Belfast with the fuck it, you know, like I can't be bothered anymore. So I came back to Belfast and just didn't speak to anybody for a couple of months. But I didn't know at that time that was a breakdown. I wouldn't have defined it as a breakdown, you know. I was just like, I'm fed up with everything and everybody. But then I moved to New York, and then I had the renewed sense of purpose in terms of, let's get the bar open. But my drinking, like, there was a whole catalogue of incidents where I look back now and go, that they were definitely red flags.
Jack and Sean opened the highly anticipated Dead Rabbit in New York City. The success was instant, and this was reflected within months of opening at the prestigious award ceremony, Tales of the Cocktail.
You have hundreds of judges from all over the world vote for, like, world's best, America's best, European Asian, like all these different things. And it ended up, we had only been open three or four months at that stage. And we walked away with world's best new bar, world's best cocktail menu, and I won world's best bartender. So that was when I was 22 or 23. And I was young, I was youngest by, and still am the youngest by about 10 years or so. But I remember that being a major high, and then that's what precipitated the fall. The stress of opening your own place and the hype about the bar was obviously, it was widely anticipated, the bar opening. And then you're in a different city, no family, no normalcy in terms of all that stuff. And then you had no money. It was a perfect cocktail of craziness. And then the bar opened and it went from, we had no kind of recognition to all this recognition within the space of a couple of weeks, a couple of months. So it was just all very difficult to deal with. And then obviously with the additional thing of like, you're recognized as the world's best bartender. There was people coming in and just sitting there with their phones and videos and stuff, just taking, and they, like, it was a whole other layer of pressure. I quickly lost interest and focus because I'm like, right, I've got, so what's the next target? And I couldn't figure out what that was or what that meant for me personally. You know, I just knew that I didn't find any meaning in bartending anymore. So that just led to more and more drinking. It led to going to starting to see doctors with anxiety and these types of things. And then you add in the layer of antidepressants and benzodiazepines. And I remember distinctly my first day going to a psychiatrist and saying like, these are the problems. And they give me, and it was a couple hundred of these pills, but it was Ativan. I remember getting it and I took one and thought like, oh, this is like, I'm cured. And I went back to the apartment that night and I remember having a mad drinking session with that and the benzodiazepines. And they said to me, take them as you need it. And I mean, that's just the worst thing you can say to somebody like me. So I'm amazed, like looking back, that I didn't die at that juncture. You know, I'm just amazed. It just got worse and worse and worse. And then that obviously led to the March of 2016. And I remember that whole night, that whole day. Well, I had an argument with my then girlfriend, and I just was like, right, like fuck it, I'm going. I think I was not drinking at that point for a couple of months, but I was still sort of drinking, and still taking benzodiazepines. But I went out that night with no intention of what happened that like later on that night. But I just went out. That was the first time I remember making a conscious decision, like I'm going to go out to get absolutely hammered. Whereas before, I never made a conscious decision to get hammered. It just ended up what happened, because I had no like control over it. But ultimately, I went to a bar. It was a bar. It's like a Scottish Irish bar in Williamsburg, and I went and got like I was there for most of the day, and then I finished that, or when I was thrown out or whatever happened there, and stopped at a bunch of stores on the way back to pick up sleeping pills, and then went back to the apartment and blended them all up. And started drinking it like it was like a cocktail type thing. And I'm able to remember this because of the credit card statements and stuff like that. And then I was able to just, like when I got my phone, I called 911 before falling asleep. And then I ended up in hospital. Like the next thing I remember, I woke up in hospital and my stomach was pumped. And then that's when I was placed in a psychiatric unit for a week. Because obviously if with a suicide attempt, you're put into suicide watch. So I did that for a week, and that was like when the first doctor that came to see me, it was during the Easter weekend, and she came in and see me, and she's like, you're not, because at that point they were saying like, oh, you're bipolar, you're manic depressed, all these things. She said, you're none of those things. Your mental health problem is that you're an addict and you need to deal with that, and that will help all the other issues. And for me, that was liberating because it was like people were just so on medication and I was still self-medicating. So when I heard that, I was like, right, I just need to focus on that one thing, even though that's a huge thing. It was like that one thing. So I ended up getting discharged, and then that's when I started my recovery.
Jack has worked with a multitude of people over the years. I asked, based off his own personal experience, interactions with his peers, and perhaps his observations during this time, did he believe people working in the bar industry were more likely to experience mental health challenges in comparison to those who worked in other sectors?
Absolutely. There's been studies on this, and studies I've seen have obviously validated that. But I mean, for the bar world, is a perfect ground, breeding ground for these types of issues, because you're having people that are, it's a group of misfits, you know, it's people who are either transient in the industry and they're following other dreams, or they haven't succeeded in their dreams and it's a fallback option. So there's a whole, it's a bunch of people that are not fitting into other parts of society, which is a great positive for our industry, but it when it leads into, you've got this group of misfits, you're putting them into rooms with not a lot of, like, they're dark rooms, or loud music, fast food, bad diets, and obviously the kind of companionship as a collective, which is all centered around alcohol and drug consumption. I mean, it's just a perfect breeding ground for exacerbating any type of illnesses. So for me, it's the perfect breeding ground if you have any of these problems. And when I came out of the hospital, the thing that I wanted to do was to, like, shine a light on the fact that this is a problem and we need to deal with it. I think I love our industry, and I've been in recovery, I love it even more, but we need to have more conversations around, like, the way that we work, the way that we eat, the way that we sleep, the pressures in terms of working and serving people for 40, 50 hours a week, and even conferences. Like, there's been a lot of, like, it's like a positive thing when you get hammered or you know, like, look, oh, you were so drunk last night, like, it's a cool thing, you know. So there has been a shift from that, but to go back to your question, like, it's definitely the perfect breeding ground for these problems.
As both Jack and Tim have discussed, there is a huge element of personal responsibility when it comes to looking after your mental health within this industry. We can do this by looking at how we eat, how we sleep, how much alcohol are we consuming on a weekly basis, are we getting exercise? But there is also a huge element of responsibility on the employer. I caught up with academic Dr. Deirdre Curran, who is based in the National University of Ireland, Galway, and she has taken a keen interest in the working conditions of Irish hospitality.
My main area of teaching and research within the university would be around the employment relationship and how that employment relationship can sometimes go wrong, and workplace conflict and employment rights. All of that is my daily bread and butter in the university. And so I've been working there for over 20 years, and over 20 years, because of the stuff I teach to 18 and 19 and 20-year-olds, they would frequently come to me to tell me about the problems that they're having in their employment relationship. And that would often be in the hospitality sector, because an awful lot of our students would work in hospitality. So I've known anecdotally for a long time that the employment relationship in hospitality has been challenging, and could be a lot better. But in Ireland, we had almost no solid evidence of that. So all of these issues fed into a growing interest that I had in hospitality. But the burning issue all of the time was, we've no evidence. You know, we've no solid evidence. So when the minister would come out and say everything is hunky-dory in hospitality, or the head of the Restaurants Association would say everything's hunky-dory, we had no evidence to refute that, and they had no evidence to support it. So last July, I decided it was time to embrace that challenge. And so I did a comprehensive online survey that had 38 questions covering everything from your experience of your treatment at work, to your employment rights, to your education and training and experience, to your experience of HR practices in the sector. And it was an online survey that was sent out through various social media platforms, and it bounced from one platform to another. And in the end, a substantial number of people completed the survey in great detail. And so now we have some data. And unfortunately, the responses or the results of that survey were overwhelmingly negative. So, for example, 76% of respondents said that they had experienced verbal abuse sometimes or often. 64% said they had experienced psychological abuse sometimes or often. 15% said they had experienced physical abuse sometimes or often. Now, 15% sounds like a low number, but what number is acceptable for physical abuse in the workplace? 52% didn't get their minimum entitlements to rest breaks. 42% didn't get a written statement of their terms of employment, which is they're legally entitled to within 5 days. 16% don't get regular payslips, and their payslips are often don't clarify exactly what they're paid for and what they're not paid for. 55% witnessed or experienced harassment in the workplace, and that harassment was predominantly based on gender, based on age, and based on race. 63% had witnessed or experienced bullying. So, you know, and 48% said they had no opportunity to raise their voice in the workplace. So very powerful and dramatic and negative statistics. A lot of the people I talked to, or the testimonies I got, talked about abuse from their colleagues. You know, it's a very hierarchical sector. So, you know, the owners at the top, the chefs are pretty close to the top. The supervisors are higher than that, higher than you. And then you're the shop floor person, you're at the bottom of it. So it's very hierarchical. So there's a lot of abuse, you know, based on hierarchy. There's a lot of abuse from customers. You know, so it's there are certain features of the industry that lend itself particularly to problems. So my main argument is, well, I have a couple of main arguments. One is I can appreciate that there are particular challenges in the hospitality sector. I understand that the context for hospitality is uniquely different. Things like, you know, it's a lot of small employers who set up a pub or a restaurant because they're passionate about their craft, but they're not necessarily trained managers. Things like the work itself can be incredibly slow and boring for parts of the day and incredibly intense for other parts. On the other hand, you know, through the Galway Hospitality Campaign, I know that there are employers who do this well. So I know it doesn't have to be like this. I know you can make a profit without harassing or bullying or verbally abusing your staff. I suppose my mission really is to see what improvements can be made to the sector. And now we have the COVID-19 situation and the whole hospitality sector is imploding. But I will still argue that whatever shape it comes back, this is an opportunity for us to bring it back in a better way for everybody, you know, in a way that will help the business to do better, help the workers to do better. One of the last questions that I asked the respondents in the survey was, what suggestions would you have for improvement? Because another big passion of mine is employee voice. I believe that workers should have a voice, and the people who do the actual work are the people who know best how it can be and should be changed, but they're never asked in a lot of circumstances. So the second last question on the survey was, what suggestions would you have for improvement? And these people had wonderful suggestions. All 635 respondents put something into that. And those suggestions were around issues to do with pay and tips, issues to do with working hours, issues to do with employment rights, issues to do with how they could be managed, issues to do with work treatment. So, for example, give workers more praise, treat them with dignity and respect, create a trusting environment, protect your employees from abuse from customers. In terms of HR practices, training, proper training, opportunities for progression, sufficient staff so that people aren't run ragged, behavioural standards, acceptable behavioural standards. In terms of pay, give people sick pay. And this is going to be really prevalent in the post-COVID era. You know, if you work on a minimum wage and you get coronavirus and you know you're not going to get sick pay if you stay out of work, then you're going to go into work. And so we need to look at providing sick pay for workers, a fair system for sharing out tips. In terms of HR, in terms of other suggestions that people had, you know, there were simple things like if people got breaks, they had nowhere to go. Nowhere to go that they could just scream or laugh or shout or eat their food in peace. So even having a separate section where they could go when they were on their break, give them a free meal, do more research. So fantastic suggestions. And if I had got this list from a highly acclaimed HR book, I would be extremely impressed. And these are ordinary people who are, you know, who know what could be better and what should be better.
During my conversation with Deirdre, she spoke about the importance of highlighting good practice. And there are employers out there focused on the well-being of their staff.
We always believed, obviously with our experience of working for other people, some good, some not so good, we've always placed a huge emphasis on looking after our people. We look after our staff in terms of, like, when they're in, they get aggressive discounts on, they get 50% discounts when they're in and not working. When they finish work, they're entitled to whatever they want off them on the menu in terms of food and drinks and stuff like that. So we make sure that they know that, like, we really focus on that. And the other thing that we hugely focus on in the bar is education. We invest heavily into education. I believe education is extremely important to develop yourself and improve yourself. And so we have courses in place. We have monthly mandatory training. But in terms of what are we doing to deal with this issue, we have a policy in the bar where you don't drink during your shift. The other thing that obviously I'm extremely outspoken about my experience. So there's definitely a much more fluid the conversation around those things in our business and for anybody going through those issues. So we're obviously sympathetic to people who have problems. We give people multiple chances. Again, I know from my own experience there is rock bottoms, and so for some people that's losing the job, you know. So we're obviously hugely sympathetic and we talk about it. And then we also, in terms of our education, we bake in mental health sessions, we bake in financial discipline sessions, we bake in a lot of like life skill stuff into our overall mental health or our overall education stuff, and even stuff like sexual discrimination. And there's a lot of stuff that's like not to do with actually serving people, but to be a better person in terms of like leading and being a role model. Like me and Sean don't drink. We both don't drink. We only taste. We're both very focused on our health and well-being, and you know, we lead from the front with that type of stuff. So we try our best to set a positive example in that regard. You know, there's a lot of operators that drink in their venues and get drunk and get silly and that type of stuff, that we want to go the complete opposite way. And then another thing is the security of our people, and it's hugely important. So we've had people we've had guys who have said derogatory things to women, or we've had staff that have said sexual things to women, you know, all that type of stuff. Anybody that talks like that in our spaces just gets fired because it's gross misconduct, you know. So there's a multifaceted approach that we have to let our people know that we value them, we care about them, we want them to be the best, and we want them to succeed in life.
I interviewed Gillian, who has worked in the industry for 14 years now. She's extremely passionate about the bar world, yet she is profoundly aware of the challenges people face. She speaks about the performative element of hospitality work, and despite encountering a rude customer or having your own personal issues on any given day, you must suppress these emotions and give service with a smile. This can lead to emotional labour and is a core characteristic of burnout.
Every day for a single bartender's job is you come in. So obviously you are aware of your basics, your lights, your music and all that stuff. And that is a manager's job, but it's also for you to acknowledge what's going on. Then your team, you're taking on your team's emotions. So you're like, oh, Karen's having a really bad day today. Okay, let's go and cheer her up. This is before you've even kind of looked at your station and taken in the energy of the room. You know, there's a lot of talk about vibe. Vibe is energy, and it's energy that you're putting out, and it's energy that you're getting back. People come to you to receive positive energy. They come to you for this experience. So if you are already not having a great time and you are draining your emotional battery, that can have a long-term impact on your mental health and your mental well-being, and like that you could ignore it then, because at the end of your shift you're like, oh, that was not really good night for me, fuck, I'm gonna have a pint, and then I'm gonna have four. And this is the nature of the beast, you know. And this is where we all have to be careful, because we all lull ourselves, and it's personal responsibility, into this little kind of false sense of security. Oh, do you know, I'll have a pint, I'll be fine, and it's grand. Not everybody does that. You could go home and smoke cigarettes or do whatever you want, or stuff your face full of chocolates, you know, but that doesn't go away. And then you repeat the same action the next day. And then the next day you might have to deal with a really traumatic customer who, some people are just nasty, like they're just really mean to you. And unfortunately, it's not the way, especially, you know, where you have to take it to a point. Obviously, it's your manager has to do that. But, you know, the initial conversation is you like emotional disconnect. You're just like, okay, right, sorry about that. That drink is not great and I'll absolutely change it for you. But that deposits somewhere. And I think if you are someone who might have a predisposition of mental health, that might be brought to the forefront a lot quicker than you might have even imagined. The problem is it can manifest itself in very unhealthy ways. And that can reflect in your work. So people are like, oh my God, like she's a manager, but she can't get her checklist done. Like, what's wrong with her? That person, and from experience, there have been times where I can't even look at my phone because I actually just, my anxiety's gotten so bad that I can't do simple tasks. I can come in and run a bar, but I can't actually pick up my phone. I can't read my emails. I can't respond. And I just can't do it. And this is where the impact of emotional labor has on a person. And the culture of drinking, the culture of going out boozing, that then will take energy from you too, because you're not sleeping, and that can create emotional taxing moments in your life as well, you know. I think a sign of a good manager, I think it's definitely a very important thing, is for the manager to be able to see maybe if someone is struggling, or if they do have an interaction that might be that good, is to follow up on that and be like, everything okay? Are you okay? Do you want to talk about it later? Or the next day, you don't necessarily have to talk about a bad incident that day. There's no harm in making sure your staff are happy. And obviously then the burden is on you as a manager. So managers are definitely not impervious to all this emotional labor as well, because they get the most. And also after having a busy night, then you have to do your catch up. And then if you make a mistake there, you think you're a fucking idiot. And you're like, why can't I count? Like, it's simple plus and minus, you know? And then you're locked in this like horrendous torrent of emotions. So, and then you've got to come out and lock the place down. And then you go home. And if you're lucky enough to have a partner who will listen to you, which I have been, I am blessed with Eamon, you know, just to tell them how bad your day was, you know, like, it's just having that outlet to talk to someone is really good. There's also this badge of honor that we all wear, and I don't know where it comes from. I really don't know the beginning, the makings of it, but all of us, and all of us are guilty of it. Just slammed 100 hours this week. Brilliant, great, yeah, fuck it, I'm wrecked, but it's grand. You know yourself, and you know you're doing that while you're having a shot and having whatever. And I think in my time working in bars, there was never that kind of educational platform of, maybe let's see what we can do tomorrow. Like, do you want to get up earlier tomorrow? And maybe it would have helped if you meditated for 5 minutes. Because back when I started doing that, you'd be laughed out of it. The value of meditation for me, and helping your brain, like the way you rub your feet at nighttime, you need to actually rub your brain and help yourself a little bit, because 5 minutes is of a morning. Tim from Healthy Hospital has been a massive inspiration for me, because I went to the first ever Healthy Hospital and I was like, what is this guy? I didn't know who he is. And I, you know, cool. And me and Eamon actually traveled over for it. And we went over, and in that, the most valuable thing I took from that was a 5 minute meditation. And I was like, that is so valuable. You can do it on the toilet. You can do it in your bed. You can do it before you get up. But I was like, giving yourself that 5 minute bit of self-care. No one needs to know about it. You can still be like this big person, did 100 hours a week. If great, like, that's fine. But even if you are that person who kind of feeds off that, and that's fine, just do your 5 minutes, because it really helps your emotional state.
It became increasingly obvious after speaking with Tim, Jack, Deirdre and Gillian that there are two main areas that need focused on in order to improve mental well-being in the industry. The first area is personal responsibility. Are you burning the candle at both ends? The individual must look at the lifestyle they are leading. Are you making time for your health? The second area is employer responsibility. How are you looking after your staff? Are you promoting work-life balance? Do your staff feel valued and supported? And what mechanisms have you put in place? I asked each contributor to offer an aspiring bartender advice on how to achieve success within the industry and look after themselves in the process.
We all love this industry, and it's an industry that gives so much, but it also takes a lot. And you can have a long, amazing, successful career with this in this industry. Peter Dorelli, who's the famous bartender at the Savoy Hotel, recently celebrated his 80th birthday and over six decades of working in the drinks industry. And he's still heavily involved on a daily basis within the industry. You know, he's still making drinks on occasion. He's still part of the UKBG. He's still working hard. And it's because he has taken care of himself. You know, he eats a healthy diet. He does yoga every single day. He chooses when to go out. It's, you know, for a lot of bartenders, they think because the party is going on around them, they need to be part of the, they need to be in the party, you know. So treat your job as a professional job. You know, it's not a job where you can just go and get drunk every single day. We work in the only industry where it's acceptable to drink at work. No other job. Every other job that I've come across, you would get fired. Focus on sleep. Try and eat good food where possible. Make sure exercise is part of your daily routine. Make sure that your kind of social networks are as strong as possible. It's absolutely possible to have a long-term career behind the bar. It's just that we've built an industry that burns people out extremely quickly. Take shift rotas, for example. To get into good sleep patterns, consistency is key. You know, so going to bed at a similar time every day, getting up at a similar time every day. Yet most shift rotas don't provide any sort of consistency. Whereas if you work in a normal job, you know that every day you're going to work, start work at 9, finish work at 5 and have the weekends off. So you build your entire life around those hours. Yet for most bartenders, they don't have that consistency. Building shift rotas that provide consistency, being much more kind of mature as an industry when it comes to how we drink and how we work, the wider individual responsibilities of eating well, sleeping well, doing the exercise. I think it's perfectly possible, but we just choose to have this attitude of sex, drug, and rock and roll. Live fast and leave a good looking corpse kind of attitude, which means that by the time that most bartenders get to 35, they want to get out. They've burnt the candle too fast.
You work in the hospitality industry, you love serving people, you do it too much and you end up burning out and you end up hitting people. So how do we get to the point where we stay true to what we love doing, but also look after ourselves? And I'm a huge believer in routine set you free. Before my recovery, I was like, I just went to bed when I went to bed. I woke up when I woke up. I never slept enough. I ate what I wanted to eat. I drank whatever I wanted to drink. There was no structure. When I came out of recovery, I became very regimented and disciplined. And I think in the hospitality sector, particularly when you're young, you have this vigor and energy. And I think it was in our generation, but it seems to be even more prevalent in the generations below us, in terms of they want everything right away. It's small steps every day towards bigger things. The big thing that I would say to avoid burnout would be to structure yourself so that that doesn't happen. So don't work more than 4 or 5 days a week. Make sure you look after yourself. Make sure you go to bed at the same time, you wake up at the same time. Make sure you eat healthy. Make sure you meditate. Make sure you do yoga. Make sure you've got like a full life that enables you to, when you're on stage and in theater or in the bar and in a restaurant, that you're fully ready to give that type of service. So my whole thing is like, what can I do sustained and consistently to keep moving the needle and keep pushing forward? So my biggest thing would be routine, set you free and focus on what that looks like for you.
To be passionate about something is so important, like to be so lucky to have a passion. And you can get so lost in that, and you're like, you know, you just love it so much, you're obsessed nearly, you know. And that obsession can give you this extra energy that you didn't even know you had. And you're like, I can kill this, I can do 6 years a week, no problem, I can do 70. That's brilliant. And you know, you're starting out, you're meeting new people. What I would say is, I love the bar trade. I would love to own my own bar. I don't want to go into any other field of work necessarily. You know, if I had the money behind me, if I had my own money, I'd open my own bar tomorrow. The in-between part is very important, because as passionate as you are about this industry, you are human. And what happens with humans is they get overwhelmed, and you only have so much fuel in your tank. And to make a sustainable practice, if you're telling me that you want to be a sustainable bartender, you know, you want this for the rest of your life, you need to put in practices that will make sure that you have a balance. Because if you don't have a balance, as the years goes on, you will start to get tired, you'll start to burn out a little bit, you might start to dislike your job. And how sad is it that going from someone who is so passionate about their industry and wants to do this forever, absolutely hates their job purely because of the nature of how they have been working. Look at your hours, look at your contract hours. You can do shift work, that's great, have a balance. Look at the hours that they're offering, make sure it's written into your contract. Nobody needs to work 60, 70 hours a week, because it is not productive for anyone. It's not productive for you. You think that you're doing your best for the company, but you're actually not, because they are not getting the best out of you. How can someone who's done 60 hour a week possibly give their best? They can't. But if your hours are say 40, 45 at a more manageable pace, those accumulative hours, they do build up over time eventually, and they do take their toll physically and mentally. And it is up to you now to make sure that you look for a job that you're going to benefit from with regards to education and training. But you have to be proactive in your choices and how you manage yourself.
Mental ill health is one of the top, I would say, top three challenges facing employment generally, and then hospitality specifically, and even more so because of the things that we've just talked about. So, you know, so one of the suggestions actually from employees was mental health supports for workers. You know, for me, mental health is all about when your resilience is overstretched. So your capacity to cope is exceeded. And, you know, all of us have a normal level of resilience for ourselves that is impacted by our day-to-day lives, both at home and at work. But when that, the pressure and the stress pushes you beyond your resilience, then you're into the realm of mental health challenges. And because of the circumstances in which a lot of these people work, they're being pushed to that level much quicker than workers in other sectors might be. So it's a huge issue. I mean, I am utterly convinced that humans are the most valuable part of an organization. You can have fantastic technology, huge amounts of capital, but if you don't have good people who are committed to working, to being engaged and working well for your company, you might be partially successful, but you won't be very successful. If you have less technology and less capital, but you have the best people and you treat them the best way, they will bend over backwards. So the hospitality sector is one of the most important sectors of the economy. It was something like 5.3 billion contributor to the economy last year. And it's, you know, it's going to be decimated by coronavirus, but it has to come back, and it will come back, because people have to eat and they have to drink and they want to socialize. I mean, if we've learned one thing, we want contact with other human beings. And while retail, high street retail, has gone online, people now more and more are shopping online. You know, your cup of coffee and your glass of wine can't go online or shouldn't go online. It's one sector where people will want to gather and they will want to eat and drink together. So it will come back. And my argument would be, if employers and employer bodies pay attention to this research and this kind of data and the stuff that you're doing, then it can only come back better and stronger. And that's really what we're hoping for. As a parting shot, I did a presentation at a conference recently, and the title of my presentation was Turning Hospitality Inwards. Because, you know, if we're in the business of spreading hospitality, let's spread a bit of that backwards and treat our own people with the same respect and dignity that we do our customers.
If you've been affected by any of the issues raised in this programme, you can contact Beata House on free phone 1800 247 247 or text HELP to 51444. Alternatively, you can contact the Samaritans on free phone 116 123.